It's Ken Bergen here, and welcome to the Hospo Reset podcast. Each episode, I explore trends, innovation, and smart thinking in the hospitality industry with a particular focus on restaurants, cafes, and food service. You'll find the show notes and links for today's episode on your podcast app and look for the link at the top of the hosporeset.com website. Don't forget to subscribe to the weekly Hospo Reset newsletter and connect with me on LinkedIn and on Twitter. Hi, it's Ken Bergen here from Hospo Reset. And today in the podcast, I'm talking to Glenn Flood. He's a very experienced chef who solves leadership and team performance issues in the hospitality industry. That's a big ask, isn't it? It's a big promise. And Glenn's been delivering that in spades over quite a few years. I've watched his career from a distance. He'll tell us a bit more about that. And yeah, he's a highly experienced person who's really got the track record to kind of give people great advice and great leadership. So we're talking particularly today on building modern teamwork in restaurants and cafes, and there is a lot to discuss. Anyway, Glenn, great to have you on the podcast today.
Likewise, Ken, and thank you for the kind introduction.
So tell us a bit about your own development as a chef and your development as a team leader too, because they're kind of... they overlap, but they're separate things as well.
Yeah, absolutely, Ken. It's a beautifully broad question there. And what I'll start off is absolutely, I'm a chef by trade. I've been in the industry now for a little over 20 years. And food was always my passion there as a young cook, learning and enjoying the flavors and textures and utilizing that career to travel around the world and just grow and experience as much as I could. And later on, I think moving into sous chef roles and executive chef roles, the focus sort of shifted from my passion around food into a passion for people and the people development side of it. So that's a journey that I've really embraced and gone down a lot more structured way over the last 10 years. So moving into training and development roles, running large teams, and just thinking about how do you essentially pull consistency out of a very chaotic environment.
Okay, interesting word, consistency, because I mean, that is absolutely at the kind of core of a successful operation, isn't it, too? I mean, as simple as from the customer, when they turn up, I love that chili spaghetti and I want it to be exactly the same as 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Look, customers are like that, and food is so highly emotive. Mm. So from a customer point of view, a customer might say like, oh, I need toilet paper, or I need shampoo. I have to go to the supermarket. Mm. But as soon as we say, what do you feel like for lunch? What do you feel like for dinner? Yeah, It just brings a whole level of complex emotions to the forefront. And I think in the food industry, you've really got one chance to get that right. That is the right level of service, the right product, the right flavoring, the right menu, just to encapture the emotions of the customer. Mm. And when it's done well and consistent, then the customers return time and time again. And as a hospitality operator, I'm sure your listeners will appreciate that when you get it wrong, then it might be a year or two before your customer cycles back.
Yeah. Now, you talked about how the last 10 or so years you've been really focused on sort of team development and the people development side. And that, I guess, inevitably means we've got to learn a lot more about ourselves too, doesn't it? Because it's very interesting. Well, what have you learned in the last 10 years or so about yourself? Or how have you kind of developed as a person, as a leader? And how do you kind of develop yourself in a way?
Yeah, look, absolutely. I'm a firm believer in personal development. So I think it's one of those things as a leader or a manager is apply to self first. So how am I communicating with a group? Am I a good listener? What message am I trying to get across so that we're all really aligned? And I guess the journey I've gone through is seeking out coaches, putting myself through different training programs so that I have a real understanding of leadership and the fundamentals behind it and how that applies into businesses and more specifically hospitality businesses.
Because that takes time, doesn't it, to do those sort of things? and a busy chef who's being pushed to do 50, 60 hours a week or something like that. They just want to get home and relax rather than do a course.
How do you carve
out the time to do that? And how do you decide what course might be worthwhile or which is the right book to read?
Yeah, well, and books are probably a great spot to start. And I think, Ken, we touched on this before. I was commenting around your illustrious collection of knowledge behind you there on the screen. I think when it could be a chef or a manager or a leader, someone takes the time to invest their 20 plus years knowledge in writing a book, which is really hard to do, getting the message really succinct. And then for a mere $30, $40, you can just pick that up and then really get inside their mind and really understand. And even if you can just take one thing out of that book, it can make you a stronger leader.
Mm. What's a couple of books that have particularly kind of stand out for you as kind of classics that you've really learned from?
Yeah, well, look, at the moment, I wouldn't consider it a classic yet, but it's quite timely at the moment, is Atomic Habits.
Okay.
And so James Clear's I've heard it mentioned.
Tell us your take on that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, look, James Clear talks a lot about what are the habits leading into having really good habits. So what's the catalyst to tick you off? So an example might be, I pick up my phone. The trigger from picking up my phone is maybe I click the Instagram button, and then that then leads me down into a social media vortex. So it's really thinking about, is when you pick up your phone, is that the trigger you want to be going straight into social media? Or could you set it up in a more productive way for you, as when I click onto, or when I pick up my phone, I immediately go to another app that is more about my daily organization.
Okay.
And is that going to be a better habit for me?
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, you're prompting me to kind of have a look at the book. I've just seen the title. I've heard it mentioned, and it sounds like I'm certainly one of those people who gets distracted by shiny butterflies and Instagram.
Yeah. And I think in my journey, I was really fortunate with, I'll think about the MasterChef journey and being involved with MasterChef from early days.
Is that still ongoing, or was that a few years ago?
That was a few years ago. So just to go back,
I initially
recruited the judges, Gary George and Matt, into their roles for MasterChef, and then worked closely with the series and the infrastructure set up through Junior MasterChef and the main series in the first couple of years.
You were kind of power behind the throne a bit, were you there?
Yeah, I like to think so. They called me the MasterChef, so I was running the test kitchen. The reason I thought that was important to share is that I found through in that role, suddenly I've got people and chefs that I've really looked up to and aspired to work with many, many years in my test kitchen, from Heston Blumenthal, Maggie Beer, Stephanie Alexander, maybe a Neil Perry, not to discount spending a lot of time with Gary and with George and Matt Preston as well. And when you're in that environment, I find it forces you to be better, to want to explore more or understand what makes them different and what makes them industry leaders. So it afforded a lot of time to be looking at their books and what they'd written, their approach to food, their approach to running businesses and running teams.
Yeah.
And really put me in the right mindset to be asking a lot of questions, because I think great leaders ask questions and, most importantly, really listen to the answers.
And ask good questions as well as listen, like you say, but good questions, not just the kind of obvious ones. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
that's interesting. I'm thinking of reflection. I mean, you were kind of in front of and with some pretty powerful authoritative figures, and you need to be, well, I mean, they're just human beings, and you probably may have known them before, but you've got to be fearless in your questioning too, haven't you? Not intimidated. And I'm thinking about how sometimes chefs and managers in restaurants need to talk to the boss, not in a confronting way, but, you know, in an honest, upfront way, to sort of find out, is this the best way, or what do you actually want to achieve here or something? Yeah.
And it's a really good point there, Ken. I think that communication piece is such an important part of your influence as a leader.
Mm.
So from a chef perspective, is you might be talking there about managing up and managing down. Like, not only am I having conversations with my front of house team and my kitchen hand or my casual chef, but I also need to have a presence with the customer, but be able to talk to the business owner very comfortably about the, well, what's called commercial cookery, right? So there's the commerce, that runs behind the food side of things. I mean, I've met some great chefs that are just brilliant at putting food on the plate, but can't really run a food cost. And equally, the other great chefs who are fantastic at running businesses, but lack the creativity. So to be a good leader or to excel in your field, I think you need to be able to, if you can't do it all yourself, you need to be able to harness the skills of those around you.
Yeah, and thinking about the teamwork, which is a sort of focus today, your team is looking to you to advocate with the boss or senior management or whoever that is. If there's certain things that aren't working, inefficiencies or equipment that we need and something, they're actually, they're watching you. Is he going to be effective with this or is he going to just kind of not?
All the time. Yeah. Like your staff in the kitchen or in any organization are modeling, they're modeling around their leaders. They're observing how are they behaving? How are they communicating? What are they sensing about this person? Mm. And if you don't like a manager and that just comes across to your team, all of a sudden you can, like inadvertently or subconsciously, your whole team starts to alienate this individual based on an opinion that you didn't voice. Mm. There was just an action that came forward.
Yeah, and the way you handle, maybe say the way you handle difficulties or handle a discipline issue, people are watching and some of them, they're working, that's the way you handle someone who's consistently late or that's the way you handle this issue or something like that. And you may not realize that you're actually modeling for someone who's never done that but may need to do it in the future.
100%. And we're dealing with humans, right? So there's learned behavior and at times we don't know what we don't know. So if you've worked with a chef that's maybe like old school, really firm, very strict, a real disciplinarian, then when you hit that head chef level, you might just find yourself doing it that way because you haven't explored a different way of operating. So therefore you replicate what you know and that sort of rolls on. And in large businesses, that cultural fabric can remain in a business for a long time. And the question I ask clients, is that going to get you where you want to be? Do we know where we're going to go? Because if we're operating in an old way, but we're wanting to refine and go to a new direction with the business, well, then something's got to give.
Yeah. Just before we kind of go into more on teamwork, I'm just really been impressed with the chef masterclasses. You've been running several of them now, association with the food service trade show. And it sounds like this is something you've developed. Just tell us a little bit more about it. There's another one coming up in Brisbane shortly, I think, is there?
Absolutely.
Sydney later in the year. But what do you teach or what do people learn? What do people discover? I kind of like that word discover rather than teach or learn because I think it's a bit less threatening. And what have you learned out of kind of running those as well?
Yeah. So, Ken, the Brisbane Food Service Show will be coming up really soon and we've got the Chef Success Workshop that runs within the Food Service Show umbrella. And look, Tim Collette and the team do such a really good job of bringing the industry together. And they'd reached out to me and said, Glenn, we're loving what you do in that leadership space. Would you be interested to come on board with us and run our first Chef Success Workshop? And so talking with the team there about what are the elements and what are our audience wanting to take away, it's really targeted towards a sous chef or that second chef level that are aspiring to then run into being a head chef, exec chef, or business owner.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And what we've got is a range of different panelists that we talk through maybe personal branding and why that's important for someone today, for their business or themselves. We'll talk about what makes a good chef a great chef and having a range of learned panel members there talking around what they'd experienced going through their training and if they had the chance to do it again, what they'd do differently.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so it's unpacking those secrets of success, I think. And we do it in a very conversational way. So each of the, and that's just the way I like to facilitate personally.
Sure.
Generally everyone sitting there will take their own opinion or own perspective out of it. Mm-hmm. But I'll just try and keep that conversation going and follow the thread. And even if we're talking about long-term thinking, long-term health and well-being in the industry, which is really topical about how to avoid the burnout. And I'll ask some of our guys, what's your worst habit you've had and what did you do to let it go?
Yeah. What's some examples that people have come up with on that?
Yeah. One of them I think is around that just not eating well and just really running on adrenaline.
Uh-huh.
So as a young cook, that's absolutely the service peaks and flows and you're consuming maybe Red Bulls in the morning rather than thinking if I had something more nutritious, then that'll sustain my energy to get through the lunch service
and the cigarette for dinner, that sort of
rather thing. Than it's just the drop of energy and then like crash out, have a cigarette, jump back in, and then dinner service. So there's that link between what's healthier for the long term so that I can actually physically sustain it. Because to be honest, the commercial cooking, it's a really mentally and physically tough environment for it can be 12, 14, 16 hour shifts sometimes. And you've got to be match fit to do that.
Yeah. And with the panelists and experienced people that you've had talking there around teamwork, what are some things that they maybe have indicated that they would have done it differently next time around, or now that they're doing differently than what they did before?
Yeah, look, a really good one, and I have a really good chat with Ray, and knowing sort of he'll talk about the old style Ray, which was very
intense. He's a restaurateur in Melbourne, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Restaurateur in Melbourne and now owner of Wonder Pies. And he's a fantastic production business doing some really high-end pastries and baked goods and Bake It Co. But Ray, he's gone from Michelin star dining, high-end hotels, set up the Sofitel Academy in Melbourne. So it was a training ground or breeding ground for a lot of amazing, amazing chefs. And he talks about the way he used to approach leadership in the early days with almost ruling with an iron fist, whereas he'd just say, I could never do that in this day and age. Young people, they won't listen, they won't respect you. And he says it's more about the collaboration and just working closely with and giving people the skills and then empowering them to grow rather than demanding excellence.
Interesting. Kind of humbling in a little while, in a little bit way. Yeah. Just on the, so let's talk about the role of the head chef and the manager, how that's kind of broadened and changed and how that authoritarian thing you've just mentioned. But what are some of the other elements in the role, that sort of senior role that you've seen changing in the last 5-10 years?
Yeah. Look, one that I'm a big fan of is the empowering the team around you, but through a nurturing sort of sense. Food, as I said earlier, is so emotive. So it's a beautiful, I guess, tool to engage young people to say, look at this, what we're creating and crafting, but there's a process behind it. So for the young person really understanding what I can do, how to do it, let me do it myself, make a few mistakes, and then learn from those mistakes, and then ultimately succeed in, it could just be as simple as a handmade pasta dish, right? But that success can come through, wow, I plated it in a time frame to customer specification and got feedback, which is instant gratification. So when you clip all that together, and we did a lot of this with Jamie Oliver's 15 Foundation, when I worked with Jamie in 2006 and Toby Puttick, where it was this engagement through food and teaching and training and nurturing young people to have a sense of belief to follow a process and contribute to a team, but also get instant feedback. And done in a healthy environment, I think it's just, it's really good for the individual, that self-belief. It's, I'm not waiting for hours and hours to feedback or my yearly review, did I do right or wrong? Your customer lets you know straight away.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
Got a unique asset in food itself. I mean, sitting around in a bank working on teamwork or a real estate agent working on teamwork, they don't actually have a beautiful platter of food in front to share and discuss, do they? There's something, an extra emotional element there that we've got.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And so I see with head chefs and the ones that I work with, I'm always talking to them about the succession plan, because ideally, I think as a trainer, you want your team to be better than you. So it's rather than I've got it all locked in the vault and you've got to earn it, it's more around this is what I have on offer. And if you ask me the right question, I will share that with you. But you still need to do the work, but you've got to ask the right question. You've got to show up every day and you've got to prove that you're engaged. And through that will come the consistency, the dedication, and the habits that will make them a great chef.
I like the idea of the succession plan, because it's kind of having plan B always available too if someone suddenly falls off their bike or something happens, or if someone actually leaves. And I'm thinking back to when I was a business owner, I always wanted to know that Prince Charles was available. I know that sounds a bit weird. if the head chef disappeared, number two was kind of like ready to step up, you know.
Yeah, look, I agree. It's good for the business. It's good for the individuals to grow. And at the end of the day, you know, food or cooking is a learned skill. It is a learned skill. There's processes, there's mise en place, there's organization, kitchen efficiencies. all the little things done well will result in a good outcome. Mm. And I think the same thing in a business. If you do all the little things well, good marketing, think about your strategic direction, communicate, have effective meetings, nurture your team, have a succession plan, then the outcome is a great product that customers engage with, and hopefully that brings the revenue that you need to sustain your business practice.
Mm. So let's talk about young leaders coming up, someone who's, and people are kind of pushed fast pretty quickly if they've got some talent, or even if they haven't, that's just like, we haven't got anyone else. But what are some particular things, the challenges for developing a young team, girls and guys in their 20s, early 20s maybe, who have suddenly got to be in charge of people who are older than them or don't speak the same language and things like that?
Yeah. Look, one of the things, and I know I've lived through it as well, is the challenge with experience is there's only one way to get it. You have to live through it.
Mm-hmm.
So as young leaders up and coming and great energy, great ideas, great insights, I think for them to be comfortable or mature enough to ask out, to seek out mentors or coaches to guide them, or to be in an environment where that's being provided, the level of support, I guess the ability for them to reach out and to say, well, I know a certain amount of skills really well, but I know I've got a couple of gaps that would really benefit. Because if we don't know what we don't know, then you're leading in a way that you've learned. But if you change, say, a small cafe head chef is very different than a large restaurant, very different than a fine dining in a hotel, very different than a hospital. So there's all these broad spectrums. And this is what I love about the industry. Just because you do really well in one discipline doesn't mean you can do everything. But that, yet the perception is when you put on the chef whites from a business owner or recruiter point of view is, oh, you're a chef. Well, you can cook absolutely everything.
You can do anything. Well, yeah, interesting.
You can do it
that
all.
That kind of armor
maybe
that
not
you
really,
put on.
Really well.
Yeah, interesting. And what have you found a sort of, I think of that issue, I call it just discipline, which is, sounds like it's a bit strict, but I mean, there's someone who seems to be, they're never on time, or someone who's just never really cleans up properly, et cetera, et cetera. And sometimes those kind of things, but their work might be great. It's just that there's a few kind of faults like that. Seems like that's sometimes particularly hard for young people to kind of take on those kind of tough conversations. How do you give coaching around that sort of thing?
Look, the word that comes up when you say that, Ken, is around accountability. So I'd be working and setting up with the individual, with the client, some accountability framework. And the important thing about building it with an organization, with a client, is because the team need to build it so they own it.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. What they help create, they will absolutely own. Right. And I'll facilitate that process. So they've got a set of rules or guidelines or behaviors that are unique to that environment that everyone buys into. Because when they've done it and they've said, this is what I'm going to be accountable for, and then they'll hopefully motivate themselves to turn up each day and show up and bring their A game.
Right. So it could be as simple as setting up a group, some checklists on the wall, or, agreed kind of like prep lists or things like that.
Yeah, look, it may be even a little bit beyond that there, Ken, is the rules, I guess, can be around like what is acceptable for us to perform at a high level. So, because I think most people get out of bed.
Right, perform at a high level, not just perform.
Not just perform. Anyone can perform. I woke up this morning, turned up, here I am. But where's the fun in that? Where's that human need to evolve, to grow, and to be the best they can? So if you want to perform at a high level, then there's rules of engagement that need to be created. There's a purpose for turning up each day because you're aspiring for something beyond yourself. And with the organizations I work with, I think that's for them, it creates that motivation, that energy to then go, well, hang on, how do we push and challenge each other to always do better and to strive for that consistency, to be striving for excellence, not perfection. Perfection can be a little bit unhealthy, right? But to have aspirational goals, I think, is really important. So it's, I think, for young people about understanding, well, what's important for them, even if it's just a stepping stone from where they are onto the next platform.
Yeah.
I would challenge a young person to go, but where do you want to be in 5 years, 10 years? How do you see your career or your journey unfolding? And really think about it, because that'll dictate the steps you need to take today to show up, to be on brand with yourself and bring the best to your employer.
You're putting a lot of, I think this is really important, and it's a lot of kind of a responsibility on a head chef or a business owner, isn't it? Because they need to make the time to be reflective with people and be much more than just the to-do list on the wall and getting the ordering done. And there's sort of some sitting down time that needs to be available here.
Yeah, look, it's planning and strategy time. And to me, I don't think it's, if you're not doing it as an organization, then you're crazy. You're just dictated by who turns up, who walks through the door, whether that be customer or staff member. And I think that's a scary place to be, especially in the current climate.
Yeah.
But the good operators and the ones that have been doing it for 10, 20, 30 years, they're, you know, legacy businesses for a reason. So because they're always thinking about what's next and where are we headed? And as seasons come and go, so we need to seasonally plan our business. What's Christmas looking like? Well, you don't have that conversation in November.
No.
That's being had now.
Yes.
Leading forward to go, what could it look like? What staffing levels? What's our product going to look like? Yeah. How's our brand being represented?
Let's get our holidays out of the way in September.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, you know, will we have the skills? If I think of it, and sporting teams probably do this really well because every year they're going for a premiership, right? So every year, who have we got? Who are our star performers? How are we supporting and nurturing them? And then what's the next generation sitting behind them? And, okay. and are we getting enough cross-pollination with them?
Keep talking about this sporting analogy because I think it can be useful. Do you use that when you're talking to teams?
Yeah, absolutely. It's something that I think as a human you can relate to, right?
Yeah.
Like, well, what sport do you follow and how does that twist together? So if you're watching, it could be, say, Roger Federer on if you enjoy your tennis. And it's, well, what is it that you like about him? Well, performs, turns up at the net, brings his A game. And I remember hearing a podcast some years ago and they were talking about what he does to maintain that world-class status at the time. And it was not what he put on the court. It was the day after winning the Oz Open. He's out there the next morning for a three-hour training session, like not even one day off.
Wow.
Not even one day off, just out there consistently hitting the ball over the net. It's just practice, practice, practice.
So seven doubles, is that what you're talking about?
What it is, it's a match fitness. And I think the good thing about food in that regards is if you want to go forward in your food journey, that there's so many hours that you can groom up. I think the ruling's about 10,000 hours will groom your excellence.
For mastery.
Yeah, absolutely. For mastery. Yeah. And so the 10,000 hours are available. It's just, do you have the match fitness to keep up with it? Now, I'm not saying it's right or wrong to be doing a lot of hours. I just know that in the industry, the high performers, they work and they don't count the hours. They enjoy the work.
And I think now from what you're saying, this is not just 10,000 hours on the pans. This also could be recipe costing or reading Atomic Habits or and applying it or improving your food photography skills or a whole range of different things.
Yeah. Absolutely. And interesting point you make there, Ken, is that as a cook or in hospitality in this day and age, there are so many opportunities to, you know, make a career out of. And I think pre almost that MasterChef era and MasterChef just sort of blew up the food media and the styling and the marketing and influences and how that all can all clip together. There's a lot of great people making a lot of fantastic content that they can sell and market and utilize with brands that didn't exist a decade ago. To be a cook in this current climate is really exciting. Yeah. Am I going to specialize in one thing and just do the best croissant, you know, for all time? Or the best pie or the best gelato, you know, or do I want to have an amazing cafe or restaurant or caterer or just my own brand doing my own thing or create my own product line? I mean, it's all available if you look at it.
Yeah. Tell us about developing teamwork with that includes workers, because the fact of the matter is probably maybe what 60, 70, 80% of our workforce, English is probably not their first language or they weren't born here. They're kind of the backbone of our industry. And I think to be honest, there's still a kind of low level racism happens. There's some exploitation and there's certainly some cultural differences and misunderstandings there. How do you help teams develop that to kind of overcome those issues?
Yeah. Look, interesting point. My perspective on that there is that kitchens have always been, you know, super global, super international. Mm-hmm. I can't recall a kitchen that I've ever worked in that didn't have at least five or six nationalities running.
Yeah, United Nations.
Oh, 100%. So there's this, and the universal language is food. So to develop a good team, you've got to come back to the universal principle. Why we're all there is to create great food. And as I said earlier, cooking's a learned skill. So it's really for the individual. If you're coming from overseas to, you know, build a life for yourself in this country, it's what's the driver behind it. And if the driver is my career or I need to learn or my residency, and that hinges on you working in this kitchen, well, it's like, great. Mm-hmm. Well, that's important right now. Let's just embrace it. Someone like that, it's not necessarily thinking for them what it's going to look like in 10, 20 years, but definitely have a 3 or 5 year sort of plan or a timeline so they can go, well, if you're going to work in my environment, let's just make it the best experience possible. Mm-hmm. And with the team meeting communications, I think really, really important. I've been the foreigner in kitchens where I've worked overseas.
Right? Yeah.
Those little cultural nuances come up all the time.
Yeah.
But under the pressure cooker of service, that's where everything sort of comes apart. But good people are good people and skills are skills.
Yeah.
So if you've got someone in your kitchen that is lacking, well, that is the benchmark of your ability to serve. It's like you're casual reserve pot wash, that is the benchmark of your hygiene, because guaranteed what's going to happen when you get the complaint is that the head chef's off or the senior guys are off and, oh, it wasn't me, it was such and such and such and such down the food chain.
Yeah.
But that's the level of your systems. So you either haven't trained or you don't have the right systems in place to get that person to the skill level that is required to be consistent with your product.
Yeah. What do you recommend around things like team meetings, team communication channels, WhatsApp groups or Facebook groups or there's the sort of digital communication, there's the face-to-face meetings. What do you find works best in a busy place?
A combination of it all, but without saturation. So I think WhatsApp as a platform is really good because you get that instant feedback and you can share very quickly. Example, look, I've just come down sick. I can't make my shift. Is there someone that can assist and step in? Mm-hmm. Bang, you get that instant comms. Whereas going back in the day, it might have been 3 or 4 phone calls, can't find someone. They don't have a mobile or they're somewhere else and you couldn't find them. So now we get the chance to engage very quickly. It doesn't matter whether it's meetings or whether it's online platforms or group emails. One of the key things that I find is so important is just setting the expectations of how those meetings are to be conducted.
Right, okay.
So it is a frequency and again, a set of rules or expectations of the way we converse with each other. Because it only takes one person to drop an offhand comment that is misconstrued and all of a sudden all your good intention is just blown out of the water. So that's, I think, about the team getting together, and this is where the head chef or the head of the food and beverage would need to lead that charge and say, what platform are we doing, team? What is the best for us all? What do we all agree on? And what are our rules of engagement so we all respect each other's opinion? And if that's not set up, then it's just going to be sort of Chinese whispers. And we all know what happens in that regards. Suddenly the team are running in the wrong direction through no fault of their own, just the message got distorted.
With all the different businesses that you're across, do you see like weekly catch-ups work best or less frequently or mostly just through WhatsApp, or what do you find?
Weekly is a frequency I find works best, and then the leadership would be a more senior meeting around monthly, because that's a chance to plan and forecast what's coming up, debrief on what's been, what do we love, what are we going to leave, what are we going to let go.
What do we love, leave and let go. Okay, that's a good good little discipline to run that regularly, I guess, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, nice. And things like rostering software and menu and recipe software and all those kind of things, do you kind of encourage those to be kind of like a foundational systems for good teamwork, or are they just more on the side? What do you find works best?
I think your processes are really important there, Ken, and you touched on some really important ones there. These are, I think, processes are fantastic. All right, to have, but they all take people to run them. And so where my forte is, and I guess my focus is around the people, because if it doesn't matter if you've got the best process in the world, if no one's using it, then it's not going to work. So it's a real hybrid between the two. Understanding what processes are in place and why, But then more importantly, how do we operate them so that they're bringing optimal performance to the team and to the work that we're doing?
Yeah. I've seen that where there's sort of digital toys, new this and new that, shiny objects, and actually no one uses it. So
yeah, well, then that's great. You've like as a business, you've purchased something fantastic. It sits on the shelf and then no one really uses it. And we just go back to what we know. The old school way of doing things. So there are some of these apps and things like that are fantastic. Yet again, if we don't have access to them in the kitchen, or if not everyone knows how to use them or get the best out of them, some of the costing apps and everything, well, they become very convoluted. Yeah. And what's very practical in the kitchen, remember, we've got a high-pressure environment, things are moving really quickly, English is second language going on, pressure of service, old printed recipes, perfect. Here's the recipe, here's the list, this is what you do. It's like recipe is a classic one. Here are the ingredients, here is the method, here is the plate-up notes, and the outcome, start to finish process. It is simple as that and taking that rationale, but then laying over to your business and saying, what are the ingredients for your business? What's the method by which we go about it? And then what are the outcomes that are consistent?
Okay, really think of recipe methodology around
absolutely,
that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it applies in so many different ways. It's the process because what is a recipe? It is about a process for a consistent result. Result, theoretically, doesn't matter who picks up this recipe, we should get a consistent result.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, it's interesting. Well, it's still as live as ever, front of house versus back of house. Sometimes we've got like two teams working sort of side by side there, but, you know, for the customer to have the best experience, we need them to be working as one big team. What are some ways that you've sorted this out when there's been a bit of friction, or what do you find best to keep this working harmoniously?
Yeah. Look, a great one. And I've seen it happen in so many ways and continues to do so, that us and them mentality. What I do know is it's not cohesive and it doesn't lead to long-term results. Actually leads to a lot of internal frustration. It comes to the leadership in that regard. So your front of house manager and say your head chef in the kitchen, they need to lead and model that behavior of what's acceptable for everyone else in the organization. And so that is sitting down with a good structure meeting frequency about understanding the other side of the equation, because I've done this successfully before. I've put in, so like it could be an induction program or a training program, bringing front of house operators just for a couple of hours into a kitchen during service, just for some menial sort of tasks or some mise en place. But for them to really understand that intensity and the variables and how they impact the kitchen, but equally as so, taking chefs and putting them out customer facing for a short period is just so humbling for them to be like, well, hang on, now I'm getting asked lots of questions that I'm not sure to answer. Yeah. And I have to communicate really clearly, eye contact with the customer, there's nowhere to hide. But the customer's just asking, oh, can I get a variation on this dish? Now in the kitchen, we might go, we don't want variations. We've created the dish in a particular way. But the customer wants what the customer wants. So how do you filter that information, or how are both teams armed with the knowledge to say, yes, dear customer, we understand that your preference is not for X. However, we've crafted a dish in a particular way and we know it's delicious. So if you're not allergic to this, please just go with it, or we'll just leave it off the dish. You know, because to add something onto a meal, you can change the overall experience of it. So it can be problematic. Plus, it's another variable to add to the kitchen, which is another opportunity to make a mistake.
Yeah. We're coming back to that word consistency we started off with talking about. You know, consistency means no faults and no mistakes. Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah, and then
this front of house, back of house thing to work smoothly as one big team, you really, what your recommendation is, regular senior meetings and just going through what were the three things again, what works, what doesn't.
Yeah, what's ideal? What are we going to let go? So what are we going to leave? What do we love?
What do we love?
And what are we going to let
go? Nice. Yes, it's a good and a little agenda around that as well. Yeah. This is so interesting.
Yeah.
So Glenn, people who are listening to this who are wanting to kind of improve their leadership skills and their kind of leading of teams and their teamwork management skills, what are some things you'd suggest people do, whether it's watching YouTube or reading books or your workshops or other workshops? What's a range of just activities you'd recommend?
Look, I think podcasts are a really good way to go. So even ones like this, Ken, where you're listening to other perspectives joining different workshops or just turning up with different industry events, because the idea being that for the individual, you're just trying to get another viewpoint of something you haven't considered before. And in a podcast point of view, it might be a conversation that you with someone that you might not get to face-to-face or be face-to-face with, to hear something interesting and go, wow, how do I explore that a little bit further? And then ask yourself a better question.
Yeah, there's an amazing range of podcasts available out there just in hospitality. Wow, incredible. Yeah, I mean, there's your own one too. I guess you'll be, are you going to be doing some more of those?
Yeah, look, Kitchen Therapy, we had a lot of fun with. That was a COVID project with Toby and myself, but we really enjoyed it. So we were just talking recently about, right, what's the next season going to look like and who we're going to speak with. Okay. And that was just an opportunity for us to get together with industry colleagues that we love and just have a conversation about how they got started, where are they going, what are their learnings. And similar to yourself, I'm a curious individual, so I like to follow others on their journey and learn from what they've done, maybe learn from their failures as well. So you go, I might not repeat that. I might do something else and try.
I always find that very valuable when people are prepared to talk about what didn't work and how we turned it around or how we fixed it. It's, it's being human, but it's also actually we sometimes learn the most valuable things that way too. Yeah, interesting. This has been such a great conversation. I'm learning a lot, as I always do, from these podcast interviews. What's the best way for people to connect with you, Glenn, and keep in touch?
Yeah, look, just jump on my website, Glenn with a double N. Can just connect at my website, www.glennflood.com. LinkedIn, okay, we'll another fantastic resource, or follow me on Instagram.
Yep. I know you're regular on LinkedIn. Just start the conversation. Yeah, and Instagram as well, Glenn Flood, is it?
Yes.
Terrific. Fantastic. Really great talking to you. Really appreciate your time, Glenn. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Ken.
Thanks for joining me. I hope you're feeling inspired after listening to this episode. You'll find the show notes and links for today's episode on your podcast app and look for the link at the top of the hosporeset.com website. Don't forget to subscribe to the weekly Hospo Reset newsletter and connect with Ken Bergen on LinkedIn and on Twitter.